Hello and welcome to the Albion Roar Down Under, the podcast for those Brighton and Hove Albion expats and local converts here in Australia and New Zealand,
sponsored by Pure Media.
My name is Richard Parker here in Auckland. I'm once again joined by the main man at Seagulls Down Under, Mr. Steve Longley. With the busy Christmas period over, the Albion made it 5 points from five games played, which disappointed a frustrated Chris Hughton, especially as the couple of draws could easily have been wins. We sit only 3 points above the relegation zone, but the good news is there's still a few clubs between us and third from bottom. On the show today, we'll be talking about the aforementioned games during the Christmas period and assessing Albion's progress going into the second half of their first Premier League season. We'll also be looking forward to the FA Cup third round tie against Crystal Palace, should Chris Hughton play a weakened side. Our special guest on the show today is an unlikely Brighton fan. He is a former international cricketer playing T20 and ODI internationals for Australia. He has also played first class cricket for Nottinghamshire and began his cricket career in England playing for Horsham Cricket Club. Let's welcome David Hussey. How's it going?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thanks for the introduction.
No worries. Is it correct?
That I'm a Brighton Hove Albion Seagulls fan? Yes, I am. I was fortunate enough to play club cricket for Horsham in the West Sussex Premier League in 2001, and they were the lovely family in Broadbridge Heath, and they happened to be season ticket holders of the Seagulls, and yeah, managed to rock along to a handful of games. And my favourite player at the time was Bob Zamora, but I really liked the antics of Mickey Adams, the manager at the time. He was very entertaining on the sidelines.
So let's begin with that. How did you end up in Horsham?
I was at university in Perth, Western Australia, and I wanted just to have a bit of a sea change and a bit of a gap year, I guess. And I was fortunate enough to know a few English players who come out and play cricket in Australia, and they suggested that Horsham's a really good cricket club, and just to try and get involved there. And yeah, I landed on my feet once again, and stayed with a lovely family in Broadbridge Heath, which is just down the road from Horsham Cricket Ground. And yeah, they happen to be a huge Brighton and Hove Albion fans, so I sort of jumped on board. And I think we were in League Two back then, and we ended up winning the league, so it was a rather exciting time to be a Seagulls fan.
So would I be right in thinking that's 2001?
Yeah, exactly that. So I arrived freezing cold in April 2001, and Brighton was pretty much maybe at the top of the League Two table at the time. And like I said, Mickey Adams, I think, was the manager, and he was rather entertaining on the sidelines. And Bobby Zamora was scoring goals for fun. So sort of jumped on board, and a couple of road trips to I think, Grimsby Town or Carlisle, something like that up north.
And that didn't put you off?
I was probably more strong after that, because I think we won on a cold, wintry Tuesday night up north, and it was really entertaining game.
So okay, let's stop there. Anyone who thinks you are not a true Brighton fan has now had that wiped away, because you've been to Grimsby on a Tuesday night, diehard fan, yeah. Right here.
Well, I wasn't wearing the colours of blue and white, but I sort of hid underneath a freezing cold jacket and a scarf. But it was rather... We won, which was probably the most important thing, and made the drive home rather enjoyable.
So it was almost fate then, coming to Horsham, and then you became a Brighton fan.
Well, I guess so, yeah. Sort of jumped on board, and I think they won League One the year after that, so I just saw nothing but success. But I probably should tell you, when I played cricket for Horsham, I happened to meet Steve Gadding, who's obviously Mike Gadding's brother. And Steve obviously played for Arsenal for many years, and then jumped over to Brighton. And heard many, many stories about Steve, but what I liked about him the most, he was just a really humble and nice man, and he was a Brighton Hove Seagulls fan through and through. And I ended up playing against his son, funnily enough, who also played for Brighton in football as
Joe,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Gadding, yeah.
Was there ever any interest in Sussex while you were playing for Horsham?
Well, no, Sussex was already... their overseas players were, I think, Murray Goodwin or Michael Divinito at the time, and I probably wasn't quite at the level to play as an overseas player. I was only playing club cricket in Perth, Western Australia at the time, so... but a few years later, I was lucky enough to get a joker or a wild card into being an overseas player at Nottinghamshire, and they took a huge gamble on me, and fortunately enough to spend 9 wonderful years at Trent Bridge.
Oh, awesome. So, before you came to Horsham, were you a football fan before in Australia?
Yeah, I was. Probably not a huge football fan, as in probably just watched the FA Cup or watched the EPL highlights on the telly, which was probably shown on SBS in Australia and or on Fox. I was probably more of a Southampton Saints fan. I loved Matthew Letizia because he used to just go for the shots for goal for fun. And I just remember in, I think, about 97, 98, Southampton were 2-0 down against Newcastle at home. And yeah, Matthew Letizia scored two in about 10 minutes. And the second one just brought the stadium down. So it was amazing, amazing game.
Obviously, being a Brighton fan now, you hate Southamptons, right?
Well, I didn't really. I hated Crystal Palace more, but I didn't know the reason why. And now we've got them in the FA Cup coming up, so sort of like a must-win again, I guess. It's local derby, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk about that game a little bit later. So, obviously, Australian cricketer on the show. We can't not talk about the Ashes. So, England 3-0 down after four matches. Before the Ashes started, were Australia really confident that England's record over here wasn't that great and Australia are always so dominant over here?
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer because before the season started, both teams were rather inconsistent. Like, you'd play your best and the English would play at their best and they'd be world beaters, and then they'd sort of be a little bit inconsistent and let the opposition in. And I think Australia were in the same camp. But I think once the first test was done and dusted, I think Australia got a lot of confidence from actually beating the English in the first test in Brisbane. And then going to the pink ball test, I thought Australia played outstandingly well. And then they let the English back in the game, into the test match, with James Anderson producing an unbelievable spell of bowling. But I think once the 2-0 down and going into the Wacker test, I don't think the English had won there for many years. It's a tough place to play, especially for a foreign team coming over. But yeah, the Australians play very, very, very well at home, and they're very, very confident. But when they go away, it's a different story.
Yeah, can we do something about Steve Smith? do you think England missed Ben Stokes?
Well, of course. Ben Stokes is probably the premier all-rounder throughout the world at the moment. Him, Hartik Pandya from India, probably Marcus Stoinis or Mitchell Marsh from Australia. There's not too many genuine all-rounders floating around. So Ben Stokes is just a huge loss. He lengthens the English batting order. He's a genuine, probably top five, top six batsman for the English team, but also he's probably a genuine number three seam bowler in the team. So also provides a bit of stability and balance in the test team as well.
Do you think without Steve Smith in the side that Australia would have still won the Ashes?
A tough one, really. Team, I guess a lot of confidence is lost because he does provide a lot of stability and to the other batters around him a lot of confidence as well. And what he also does is he bats for a long time, so it makes the English bowlers bowl for a long period of time and takes a lot of endurance out of their attack. And if Steve Smith's not playing, somebody else has to step up, and perform half as good as Steve Smith has done, I guess they still have done a pretty good job.
I see that today, obviously, Mason Crane's been brought into the side. He's a Sussex boy, born in Shoreham.
Yeah, he played for Worthing, didn't he?
I'm not 100% sure, actually. I know he's now at Hampshire.
Hampshire,
but
yeah.
He's born and bred Sussex boy, so let's hope there can be he can set his mark on the game, and that could be another bit of Sussex sporting history going down this week with Rob Cross winning the darts against Phil Taylor. Rob Cross is from Hook, born in Hastings.
Oh dear, Hastings. They're like the mortal enemy, them and Eastbourne of Horsham. So they were the two teams that I was told you must score runs against to beat Hastings and Eastbourne. So it's probably again like Southampton or Crystal Palace for the Seagull fans.
So have England got any chance of winning the final test?
Well, they've got a good chance, yeah. I think the wicket's a little bit green today, so they're just, for mine, the English probably just haven't batted quite well enough, haven't taken enough time out of the game to allow their bowlers to rest up and take 20 wickets, I guess. If they dismiss Dave Warner and Steve Smith up front early and cheaply, it'll go a long way to winning the game. But I'm like you guys, I'm rapt to see Mason Crane get a game. He's really improved over the last couple of years for Hampshire. He's done pretty well, and just hopefully he's not another like Scott Borthwick, who's a part-time leggy. I hope he's a genuine leg spinner who can play 50, 60, 70 tests for England.
Do you think the England players were mentally prepared or even mentally strong enough to come over to Australia and put in a performance? Because, I mean, the ferocious crowds over in Australia, I mean, it's, you know, the rivalry is intense. It's the most intense in any cricketing rivalry.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? And it's like when Australia go to play cricket in England as well, but it's not just the crowd, it's everything, like all-encompassing, the media, all the sort of external things that sort of go to create all the pressure without even a ball being bowled.
So, David, what's next for the England Test team? Not a good performance in Australia. They go back home, the whole nation is deflated. What's next for them?
Well, yeah, they go back deflated, but full of confidence that they know that they're playing at home in the next Ashes series, and they play very, very well at home. Like, they got James Anderson, Stuart Broad, Chris Wokes. They bowl unbelievably well in the English conditions, and they full well know that Australians, the batsmen, don't really like the swinging conditions. So they go in at heavy favourites for the next Ashes series, and everybody knows that around the world, people play exceptionally well at home and struggle to play away. So I think the English shouldn't look too far behind and sort of just wash their hands with this Ashes series and hopefully get a bit of confidence from this current one-day tournament that's going to come up in a week or two's time.
OK. All right. You're listening to the Albion Roar Down Under. My name's Richard Parker. Alongside me is Steve Longley, and our special guest today is David Hussey. OK, let's talk about the Albion. David, what's your assessment of Brighton's Premier League season so far?
Probably what I expected, really. Being promoted, it's fantastic results. I must admit, I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't win the trophy. Coming down the last couple of minutes with Newcastle scoring in the, I think it was about the 93rd minute to seal the trophy, which is disappointing. But it's very hard to stay up in the Premiership. It's a cutthroat league. But Mid-table at the moment, I know we're only a couple of points off relegation, but we're also only a couple of points off, I think it's about 5 or 6 points off being in the top eight. So I think if we can get a couple of wins, disappointing against Bournemouth, only getting 2 points, a 2-2 draw and 1 point, but a couple of wins actually sets the season up, and maybe a top 10 finish would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, that would be awesome. So, Steve, what's your assessment of the Christmas period fixtures? 5 points from five games, not great, and we could have been more.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been more. It's disappointing. If we played against Newcastle the way we played against Bournemouth, I think we'd have taken the points against Newcastle. I think Newcastle were there for the taking. But you can understand there's a point in the game where you think, oh, we'll settle for a point because we'll either go home with 1 point than none. It's hard for us because we're fans. We want to go, oh, yeah, come on, let's attack them. And Chris Hughton's probably thinking, well, at this point of the game, let's go home with a point.
I mean, as fans, we're looking at that specific game. I think Chris Hughton's also looking at that game and the games ahead. And he's got a whole plan for the, obviously, the rest of the fixture list. But I think if you take the Newcastle game as a one-off, I just think that, like you said, Newcastle were there for the taking. If we had gone at them in the first half, I reckon we could have been a couple of goals up and the game would have been finished. It's just we gave them a little bit too much respect. And they're not as good as they were. Well, I don't know if they're not as good as they were last year, but obviously different league. But we are now better than them, whereas last year they beat us twice.
Well, if you look back over the season so far, at the points that we as fans feel that we've dropped, you know, that's an extra 7 points, you know, at least. I like Chris, don't get me wrong. He's got a game plan and everything else. But sometimes I think you've got to just, you know, attack a bit more. And the Newcastle game was a play around at the back, and then they did the same.
Yeah, exactly.
I think sometimes there's, you know, I know Chris isn't going to do it, but Eddie Howe did it on, you know, for Bournemouth. You play three at the back. You take Bruno and Bong off, you sling Goldson on, and you put Hemed up top with Murray rather than instead of Murray, because bringing Hemed on for Murray is like for like. It's not going to
It is. It's not going to change something. And it's not going to change the team that aren't getting any service to the striker anyway. So you're just putting on a player who's not going to get any touches anyway.
This is what
we've
discussed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is what we've discussed. You know, it's we're relying on the service from individuals out on the wing, and people bang on about Murray not being this or that, but Murray can hit the back of the net with a header, and so can Hemed. They're two of the best headers in the Championship last season.
Yep.
And yet we don't play to their strengths.
Yeah.
You know, Knockhart's frustrating me. He wants to get to the last blade of grass rather than cross it from deep. Yeah, it's all about the people that are going to lay on the goals. Look at Gross, for instance.
And you look at the Newcastle game and the Bournemouth game, completely contrasting games where, as you've just said, Newcastle game, two teams dead set on being defensive, and then you go to the Bournemouth game, two teams dead set on attacking. The Albion flew out the blocks against Bournemouth.
And we did a similar thing against West Ham away, you know? So it can be done away from home. We can go and attack teams, but we just seem a bit frightened to do so.
And I think also, you know, people go, oh, that's a good point away from home. That's another good point away from home. But the games are going to run out, and sooner or later, these teams that are around us, we're going to have to go after because we're going to need to win to stay up.
We're capable of getting at least 9 points before the end of January.
Yep.
We're capable of doing it. Whether we want to go and do it is another matter, but we are capable of doing it.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
games we've got coming up, Swansea, Stoke, you know.
Our next game is away at West Brom. Now,
that was the other one, yeah.
We've got to go at them. Because, I mean, when you look at the table now, the bottom two, I think they're on 16 points, and then there's, I'm not sure who's third from bottom, but they're on 20. So the bottom two are getting adrift. So you've got to think that it's going to be very difficult for those two to get out unless they go on a phenomenal run. So then you're looking at one place between what is a bunch of like eight teams.
Yeah, I think there's, in fact, there's more than 9 points. It's not 9 points before the end of January. There's between now and February, there's at least 15 points up for grabs that we are capable of going and getting.
I think in the next six games, the only top six team we play is Chelsea at home.
Stoke are in all sorts of trouble. I mean, they want to get rid of their manager. That's been made public almost. But they haven't got anybody to come in and take his place, so they've kept with him.
What's really important is how teams spend in January and how new recruits come in and change the dynamic of their side, because that can always happen. You know, you bring a couple of new players in, changes the whole team, they start winning again. So, you know, if we don't bring anybody in, but the teams below us start buying players that will, you know, get them the goals, get them winning, then again, that's another factor to take in.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a few changes that need to be done in the current setup. I mean, I can't understand actually why Baldock's not getting a run out. At least give him, you know, the last 15 minutes of a game and see how he gets on. Esquadro, he did well against Bournemouth.
I think it's a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, well, you say that a lot of people are slating him for his second half performance because he was lazy defending, apparently.
At least the same people that don't think Dale Stevens is having a good season.
Well, yeah, I know. You know, every fan's got their own opinion of things, and 9 times out of 10, you're going to end up disagreeing with whatever they're going to say. So we've all got our own opinions of, you know, what we see. He actually brought a lot of pace into the side, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, pace that we've been lacking. Solly March, in my opinion, has gone backwards in his performances. And it's all about pace. You see it. Every team last year, look at the games we broke away on the counter-attack. We've got absolutely no chance of doing that this season. Well, for one, we don't want to push the centre midfield pairing forward too much. So they're not going to back up the attackers if we do break. Whereas last season, you'd see Kyle breaking into the box from, you know, he'd run half the length of the pitch. Gross isn't particularly quick, whereas Baldock, playing in that number 10 role, you know, he'd back up anything that breaks at pace.
And he's a good finisher.
Yeah, I just don't understand why he's not getting paid. There's obviously a reason behind it, but we don't know it.
No.
And if we don't bring anybody in, you know, what's going to happen then?
David, did you watch the Bournemouth game?
No, I didn't. I've seen some highlights. I'm a bit like you. I thought we probably deserved an extra point there, or an extra 2 points there. But I don't know, a draw is a fitting result. I thought Dunk was outstanding as a big defender, and Matty Ryan is Australian, so superb.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about Matt Ryan. Obviously, fantastic performances, fantastic saves this season, kept us in a couple of games. With the Bournemouth game, it just shows that we can break out of this defensive play and go at teams. And Esquiado's performance, I wonder if that was just because he had the shackles released. Houghton said to the team, right, let's just go at them for the first 5-10 minutes. Let's try and get the win there. And they just seem to play more freely.
Do you know what I like about him? Is that he doesn't just hang out on the wing. You notice in that first half, he was linking up with Murray and Gross. He was pushing inside and linking up. You know, that's sort of how the goal came about with Knocker. You know, he wasn't out wide. He was inside. Whereas Solly March doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to run across through the path of the front two to link up with them. He just wants to hang out wide. Against Man United, we took the game to them.
Mm.
If anybody watching the highlights of the Man United game, right, I think the first five attacks they showed on the highlight reel was the Albion attacking. I don't think Man United got anywhere near our box or created anything of any note, you know, until later in the second half. We were outstanding against Man United. We shut them down. Murray was phenomenal.
Mm.
And we showed that we deserve to be in this league.
Yep.
But, and it's a big but, we took our foot off the pedal and we've gone back to the lethargic playing the ball around in the back four and no penetration, no forward passing. We know the players that are playing in the centre of midfield can pick a pass, but it just seems they're frightened to do it in case they get it intercepted and the team break away.
Now, I was just wondering about the central midfield pairing. I'm a massive Dale Stevens fan, as I keep banging on about, and I think he's been amazing this season. And he drops deep. He picks the ball off the back four. And he's got so much composure, he rarely gives it away.
Yeah.
He plays it simple. He's the man that links the defence and the attack. Davey Proper does a similar job, but I don't think as well as Dale Stevens. I think with Proper, two things should maybe happen now. Is one, we give him a rest and we put Kyle in, and we just see how that works in the midfield. Or the second thing is we push him further forward because he's a lot better going forward. I noticed his reaction when he busted a gut to get up with Izquierdo and didn't get the ball.
He wasn't happy.
But I actually thought Proper was our worst player against Bournemouth. I thought he really struggled. And I just wondered if he's tired because he has played every game so far and it is being his first Premier League season. Maybe it's time to put Kyle in there now.
Yeah, you could be right. I mean, Kyle played well, didn't he, when he came on?
Mm. Yeah, he did.
And what do you think? And what do you think of the Bong Suttner thing?
I like Bong. I thought he's had a good season so far. And I can see the benefits of playing either of them, to be honest with you. When I see the team sheet and I go, oh, Suttner's in, oh, Bong's in, it doesn't concern me. I have to admit, either one of them I'm happy playing. On the other side, when I see Scalotto playing instead of Bruno, that concerns me.
He played quite well against Bournemouth, didn't he?
He was okay against Bournemouth. Yeah, he was okay against Bournemouth. There's just something... I don't want to criticise... I don't like criticising players, and I'm not going to really do it here, but I would just say that I'm just not sure he's up to the standard of the rest of the squad at the moment, and it's probably down to experience, maybe, of the English game. I'm not sure, but whenever he's playing, I always think there's maybe perhaps a mistake in there or... It's just not quite there for me.
No, well, I did say a few weeks ago that I thought he was so far out at his depth that David Hasselhoff couldn't save him. But on the other side, I'd rather see Suttner playing than Bong, to be honest. I think he's more attack-minded. He gets forward a lot more, which is what we need. We need to be getting forward. He's got pace as well, and I think he defends really well. I mean, he put some great tackles in at the weekend. And I think I'd rather have him over Bong, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's interesting how he's rotating the two, and I'm not really sure of the reasons.
If he rotates those spots, you'd think, why doesn't he rotate the other, you know, the centre of midfield? I mean, he rotates the wings a little bit, but at the end of the day, you know, he knows what he's doing. We're just fans with an opinion, yeah. And we all like to think we've got better opinions than the manager, yeah, sometimes.
So, David, let's play, yes, let's play manager. Who would you like to see in the team that's not in at the moment?
To be honest, I don't really know who's on the sidelines. All I really know is that Matty Ryan's in goal. I don't follow it that closely. I just sort of check out the highlights and the results and sort of move on to the next game. So I can't really answer honestly. But I do like Matty Ryan in goal. He's keeping Tim Krul out, which is a big plus.
Well, we're all big Matt Ryan fans. I think he's just got better and better throughout the season. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. Whenever we score a goal, he's down there celebrating with the rest of the players. I was watching the game against Bournemouth and even the commentator mentioned that. He's come all the way from his goal to celebrate. And that will endear you to any fan, that's for sure.
Well, he's an Australian, isn't he? He likes people, likes success for other people. And I actually read a nice article about him in the paper. He's from Central Coast Mariners in the A-League over here. And he happened to see some Central Coast Mariners, I think, jumpers or scarves.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
And
sweet.
He went over and said hello to him. Yeah, that was a really nice article in the paper. So it just shows that he's a true gentleman of the game, and hopefully he does continue on at Brighton for a long time and does well for the Socceroos as well. And you couldn't probably pick a better location in England than playing at down at Brighton and Hove.
Okay, I am not going to criticise him because I think he's fantastic, but, and Steve, I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this one. Now, as we all know, and as the press likes to point out, in fact everyone likes to point out, we've conceded a lot of goals from corners recently. With, yeah, a taller goalkeeper, and I hate this issue of height, I do. I don't think it makes too much difference, but, devil's advocate, if we had a taller goalkeeper who came out and dominated the area at corners a bit more, would we concede as many goals?
Right, let me just stop you there.
I'd stop.
You stopped, so yeah. Up until quite recently, Matt had the highest percentage of balls claimed in the air than most of the goalkeepers in the Premier League. But that's not from corners. That's from crosses. But he can claim the ball in the air. We know he's shorter than the average goalkeeper. But then so was Shay Given, you know, didn't stop him. Do you know what I think the biggest problem is? In fact, I'll tell you now exactly what the biggest problem is with regards to defending corners. We take everybody back into the box to defend a corner. They all get in each other's way. There's no outlet. We need to have two people up on the halfway line, right? Because as soon as you bring everybody back into the box, it pushes their defenders forward. It pushes the defenders that are supposed to be on the halfway line, they even come forward. So now they've gone from the halfway line to the edge of the 18-yard box. And there's so many people inside that box, it just creates carnage, and we saw it. And that's what happens. Everyone gets in each other's way.
And a lot of the strikers sit on Matt Ryan as well to get in his way, to stop him sort of coming out. I think the Steve Cook header on Monday was a little bit unfortunate, but I mean, he shouldn't be scoring from, I mean, he must have been outside the 6-yard box. It hit a bald spot on the back of his head and went in the corner. I mean, it's a bit unlucky.
I've done that a few times, mate.
Yeah, that's any part of your head though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty fortunate header, to be honest, but you know, Murray got in the way of Duffy, and you saw when he went up for the ball, there was like three players around him all getting in each other's way. And that's, again, you're filling the box up with defenders hoping to defend a corner, when the reality of it is, you know, let's take two or three of those players out of that box. Don't make it so packed. Don't make it so, you know, there's mayhem in there.
Are they trying to score on the counter though?
No, but the thing is, if we've got players like, well, we've got two players, let's say Esquadro and knocker up on the halfway line, it gives them something to think about. So if the ball breaks from the corner, we've got somebody to actually get pick the ball up, because at the moment we've got no one to pick the ball up. It just comes straight back again.
And also, is there any point in having either Knockhart or Izquierdo in the box? Because they're not tall players. I mean, Murray, you'd understand, and also Hemed, big, tall, good headers of the ball. But either those two wingers, there's no point in having them in the box.
The other thing also, why haven't we got people on the post? You put two players on the post, I mean, the Chelsea goal wouldn't have gone in.
No. Would Steve Cook's goal have gone in?
Well, possibly. I mean, you know, it did come off the underside of the bar. There'll be a few defenders in the world would have got hold of that. But there's other goals that have gone in from corners that, you know, you think, oh, nobody on the post again. Mm. Nobody on the post, you know.
So what's the answer? Do we completely change our tactics at corners? Do we go zonal? Because at the moment, obviously, we're man-marking. That's not working.
Well, the only reason it's not working is because there's too many people in the box. It's just confusion. That's what it creates. It creates confusion.
And there's an irony about the two centre-backs getting praise on how well they're playing, and yet we're always conceding from corners.
Because they want to attack the ball, and I will say that 9 times out of 10, they do win the ball, you know. But they want to have a free run at that ball to be able to head that ball. You know, it's when we go up the other end and we have a corner and you've got Duffy and Dunk in the box. They haven't got every single defender in the box, or they haven't got every single player back in their box to defend it, even though we've got two good headers of the ball. They've got outlets, you know. I don't know if they've got players on the post, but...
They've not really been potent at corners, though, have they? Let's be honest. Our corner routine is float the ball to the far post to Duffy, and he either heads it over or heads it across and they clear it.
Yeah, well, the problem is that that's been going on for a while. That's been going on for a couple of seasons. That
let's mix it up. I'd
corner.
Try and get Dunk involved.
I'm a great believer of you hit a ball at pace between the 6-yard box and the penalty spot, and you've got somebody like Dunk or Duffy, they're going to score. Floated corners into the back post are an absolute waste of time.
They float the ball over. They take time to get there. They go, oh, well, they're obviously going to Duffy. Everyone climbs all over him. He might get a header, he might not, but they need to mix it up a little bit more. Mm. And now, is there a psychological thing where now whenever we have a corner, the player's thinking, oh, we might concede here. We've got to make sure that we don't. And, you know, that weighs on them.
But we need to sort it out, and we need to sort it out quickly.
Yeah.
Especially with two of the games we got against West Ham and Stoke. And we're Andy Carroll, Peter Crouch, two guys that can obviously head a ball in the box.
I just want to talk about this quickly. $75 million for Virgil van Dijk. On the BBC website today, Garth Crooks thinks Liverpool should be spending $35 million on Lewis Dunk, taking a punt on him. David, what's your opinion on that? You're a big Lewis Dunk fan, are you?
Oh, I am, yeah. I'm only a fan because one of my better friends is Ben Dunk, who's from the same name. So it's a lot of money, isn't it, to sell him? I'd like to keep him for the rest of the year and then maybe sell him at the end of the year. He's a pretty important central defender for us, and I think he provides a lot of stability for Matt Ryan in goal.
$35 million, is that an offer that Tony Bloom wouldn't be able to refuse?
It's a lot of money. I'd like to have 1/35th of that'd be nice, but
exactly.
I don't know. What's it worth? Is it worth selling one of your better players to another team and possibly staying up, or actually guaranteeing staying up by keeping him? For mine, I'd like to keep him.
I think in the long term, you've got to think, right, you sell one of your best players in the season, halfway through the season, as you're trying to stay in the Premier League. If, yes, you're getting like a tidy sum for him, but at the end of the season, you're relegated. You're losing a hell of a lot more money by being relegated. So, yeah, you're right. It wouldn't make sense. Steve, what do you think?
It's not just the relegation. If you sell him, you can just hear the groan, can't you, across Sussex? You know, what does that show the fans if you sell Lewis Dunk? Any fans around the globe, what does it show? What does it tell them? Well, are we that interested in staying up? Because surely you're going to keep your best players to stay up.
You have to, yep. There is an argument to say, well, we've got Connor Goldson, he came in, he did a good job.
I think we've been down that route before, didn't we, somewhere along the line where we thought we could fill that spot or fill a spot with a player that was playing equally as well, only for it to backfire on us.
Yeah, well, I think also in the Premier League, you obviously need a lot bigger squad.
Yeah, and $35 million, all right, it sounds okay, but I'm not even sure $35 million will even cover it, will it? Because I think he's probably, if we're going by today's prices that seem to be going through the roof, I think $35 million's too cheap.
Well, I think if Liverpool are buying, then the price gets doubled.
Yeah, that Andy Carroll, wasn't it?
Yeah, that must be about 10 years ago.
Yeah, and they still paid $35 million for him.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? Well, I mean, if you look at the rumour mill, they'll be getting something along the lines of $130 million for Philippe Coutinho. So, you know, they've got money to burn. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the January transfer window, I think we've actually picked up quite a few bargains over the years, or players that have heavily influenced the rest of the season. You could look at Anthony Knockhart. Yuri Skalak, I think, was another one we picked up in January.
Ujoa,
yeah, there's another one we picked up in January. So we've actually been pretty good in January. Do we see... Okay, let's talk about Moussa Dembélé, because that's the one that's been touted.
I've got a funny feeling. Didn't we pick Zamora up in January? He came on loan first, didn't he? And then we decided to buy him?
Yep.
Was that right?
That's right. But I think that was before the January transfer window, wasn't it?
Oh, transfer window, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
So, yes, Moussa Dembélé. Obviously, it's just rumours. He is exactly the player Brighton need. Do you think it would be a good purchase?
No, after seeing him play against Rangers. Well, he was shocking, honestly. I think you or I could have done a better job than he did. I wouldn't be going down that route, honestly.
Be a lot of money.
Are we spending that amount of money just to appease the fans? I mean, he could come and he could be the answer to our dreams, who knows? But it's a lot of money to see wasted, you know. And also, he's got to walk straight into the side. There'd be none of this Esguardo thing where he's left on the... I mean, that's 16 million we've got sitting on the bench who's hardly got a touch of the ball. Is that the same going to happen if we buy him? You know, he's going to be left on the bench and brought on every so often as an impact player. It can't happen. You can't have that amount of money sitting on the bench. Do you know what? I'd almost be tempted to go for somebody a bit cheaper and get them straight in the side. Or, you know, there's other possibilities. I mean, a good call the other day I saw from somebody, Danny Ings on loan till the end of the season.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Danny Ings, he would be perfect. He's sitting on the Liverpool bench at the moment.
Oh, is he making the bench, is he?
Yeah, he was on the bench the last game. Against Burnley, he was on the bench. And the other one is Daniel Sturridge. We'd only want players like that on loan.
I'd take Daniel Sturridge on loan.
I think a lot of other clubs would be interested in Daniel Sturridge, but you wouldn't want to be buying players like that. It would definitely be getting a loan in until the end of the season and then just seeing how it goes. Because, you know, Sturridge and Danny Ings have both had injury problems. Imagine buying them and they turn into Paul Kitson.
Yeah.
We don't want another one of those.
No.
David, you must remember Paul Kitson.
Yeah, I do, yeah. He was quite a good player before injury. Yeah. Horrible.
I remember when he joined the Albion. I think he joined at the beginning of the season that Martin Hinchelwood took charge. And we also got Dean Blackwell and Simon Rodger, two former top league players. And we thought, wow, this is going to be great. And then Paul Kitson as well. I think Guy Butters as well came in at the same time. And obviously Guy Butters wasn't fit. And Paul Kitson played one game and got injured for most of the season. And then played against away at Reading and scored. And that was his contribution for the season.
Earned his wages, didn't he?
He did in that game. That was an awesome game. I remember going to that one. But I just remember, you know, I think we were in the Championship at that time. And it was the first time we'd been in the Championship for a long time. Just after we'd won League One. And just being really excited that we'd attracted a player like Paul Kitson, who at one point had moved to Newcastle for $3.5 million, I think it was. Yeah, unfortunately, he got injured and spent most of the time out, which was thoroughly disappointing. But I do remember watching him at the Wigan when he did play, thinking, you know, he is a class act, obviously. And unfortunately, the Brighton fans you know, gave him a bit of stick for always being injured. And I think in the last game of that season, we'd already been relegated, and he played, and all the players went round, did a lap of honour. As soon as the final whistle went, he was off, up that long that long trip up to the old porter cabins, but he was having none of it.
Well, that was the Hinshelwood season. We actually started that season very well. I remember it because it was away to Burnley.
We won 3-1.
Yeah, that's right. And we thought, this is good. They were on fire. We played in that black kit. I remember that.
Yeah. And then all the fans were singing, it's going to be 3 in a row.
Yeah. And it all just fell apart.
Yeah. It wasn't 3 in a row. It was 12 in a row. 12 defeats in a row.
Yeah.
And obviously, yep, we got relegated. But yeah, that was the season Steve Coppell came on board. And he almost saved us. But unfortunately, not quite. Anyway, right, you are listening to the Albion Roar Down Under podcast, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. Also, we have an email address. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please email albionroardownunder@gmail.com. Let's talk about Crystal Palace FA Cup game, the rivalry. Now, I think Chris Hughton should be playing a B-side. Not a B-side, but he should be resting some of his main players. The priority is the Premier League. I don't care who you're playing. Yes, it's Crystal Palace. Yes, we all want to win. But what's the end game here? The end game is Premier League survival. I'd like to see Tim Krul playing goal. I'd like to see Kyle play. I'd like to see Bulldog play. And I'd like to see a core of that Premier League team rested.
Yeah, and Palace will be thinking exactly the same thing. So it will just be a reserve team game.
But I think
it's old reserve team games at the Goldstone there.
Yeah. But I think it's also an opportunity to give these players. I mean, we're not talking about players like youth team players or players who have hardly played. You're talking about seasoned professionals like Bulldog, like Kyle, you know, like Tim Krul, who will come in here and you know, they're decent players. So it's not like, I'd also like to see Jason Malumbu play. Malumbi, you know, that youth team player we've got. I'd like to see him play again.
Yeah. And Hoodemeyer and
Hoodemeyer come in. Yep, Goldson come in. It's another opportunity to get Scalotto some more first team experience. And just to get some more games for them. I don't want to see Murray. I don't want to see Stevens or Proper or Dunk or Duffy.
Or Knockout.
I don't want to see any of them. They all should be sitting in the stand with their feet up. Because it's, obviously we want to win, but it's an FA Cup game. And if we go out, okay, fair enough. Let's move on to West Brom, which is the really important game.
Yeah, all those games after, up until the end of February, are important.
They're cup finals. Right. It's a cliche, but they're cup finals.
Yeah, I mean, West Brom, Southampton, West Ham, Stoke, Swansea. You couldn't ask for, you know, four or five easier games in a row, almost, apart from the Chelsea one in between. And that is such a big 2 months for us, because after that, you're relying on maybe one or two games, maybe Huddersfield and the Palace game. But after that, it comes thick and fast. It's Spurs, Liverpool, Man United. So the points are going to be on the board.
One thing I would say before, the next in the second half of the season, we have 4 home games against the Big Six, so we've already played 4 away games against the Big Six, so it's only, we only need to go to Man City and Liverpool. So Liverpool is last game of the season, so hopefully that game is irrelevant and we're safe by that game. Because if we have to go there, needing to get something, that's it. I mean, the game before that, I think, isn't it home to Man United? And I think before that, it's home to Tottenham. So, you know, we need to be safe before April.
Away to Burnley.
Oh, okay. So, we really need to be looking to get some daylight now between us and the bottom three over the next 2 months. With that thought in mind, is Hughton now going to start going at teams?
Not initially, I don't think. I think he'll play the same cagey game. I think second half, maybe. maybe he might put us on the front foot a bit. I don't know, it's hard to say, isn't it?
I've noticed.
At the end of the day, really, it's, you know what it's like. You go out and you go out as a manager. The manager goes and does his team talk. But when you go out on the pitch, you don't necessarily forget what he said. But, you know, if there's options to attack, you're going to take them, aren't you? You're not going to, as a professional player, if you're in a position to get forward, I think the biggest problem is everybody's frightened to make a mistake. And because of that weighing heavily on your shoulders, the easy pass is played. I haven't seen, really, Stevens or Proper play a defence-splitting pass. Have you?
Well, they do play a possession game, though, isn't it? It's all about keeping possession and being patient.
Yeah, well, that's all right. At the end of the game on the stats where it says you've had 75 possession, you've done bugger all with it.
Yeah, one shot off target.
One shot off target, but you had the ball 75% of the time.
It's been the most boring football match you've ever seen.
Yeah, whereas the other team have had 26 shots on target and yet the ball for 10 minutes.
Did I read a stat on about Monday's game that there was the most shots on goal in any Premier League season? I find that incredible. I did notice Bournemouth taking pot shots, and a lot of their shots were harmlessly going into Matt Ryan, but it did bump up their shots on target stat.
Yeah, it was quite, I think it was, 26 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But you know what the thing is about that? Look at the conditions. That ball could have gone anywhere, you know? Off those greasy conditions, you'd have shots from outside the box. You'd be telling your players, look, anywhere outside the 18-yard box, you get an opportunity to shoot. The keeper could spill the ball, could go anywhere. I'd have been telling my forwards to do exactly the same thing, my midfield players. Yeah. In fact, I think Stevens did have a shot, didn't he, from outside the box, one of the first ones this season.
Well, it's because he rarely gets up there. When was the
he
last time you saw him in
the
box?
Found the pond, but...
Yeah. I think the only time you see Stevens in the box is when we've got a corner and he's standing on the goalkeeper. But, anyway, like we'll see what happens when as the season progresses. Let's get Monday out the way and go from there. It's funny, regarding the FA Cup, I was always disappointed when we always play, you know, being in the Championship, and whenever the FA Cup rolled around, we still played a B team. You know, I thought that was a bit of a waste. But now you're in the Premier League, you can kind of see the sense of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Any cup game, like the League Cup as well.
Yeah, the League Cup, no one cares about. Although, having said that, like you look at the final four in the League Cup, aren't they all top six sides?
Yeah, because the thing is...
no one can beat them.
Well, the thing is also that it's another way into Europe, isn't it?
What, for a top six side doesn't want to get into the Europa League?
A team that's on the fringes of being sixth or seventh, they would. They'd take it.
Yep.
Because you don't know what's going to come at the end of the season, do you?
No, that's very true. Yep.
The bottom half of that sort of top half of the table, they'd be fighting tooth and nail to win that League Cup.
Yeah. No, fair enough. And at the end of the day, it become what amuses me is come the semi-finals, all the top six sides that are in it, and all of a sudden it becomes important. Oh, it's a trophy. Yeah, we've won a trophy. You know, come the second, third, fourth round, they don't really care about it. Anyway, it's getting near time now, so I think we need to wrap up. So, David, I always like to end the show with some predictions. So, what do you think the score against Crystal Palace will be? Do you think the Albion will do it?
Yeah, Albion will do it, 3-2. I sort of hope we don't play a reserve team. I like the FA Cup. It's good television, so it's always attacking soccer or football. And 3-2 for us, and off we go.
Oh, exciting game. Steve, 0-0 for you, probably.
Yeah. No, not in the cup, mate, because that means it's going to be extra time, and we don't need extra time. I'll take a scrappy 1-0, to be honest.
I got it. In my predictions, all right, Steve will say 0-0 or a scrappy 1-0.
I'll take a scrappy 1-0 every game because it's 3-4. All right, it's not this FA Cup this week, but a scrappy 1-0 against Palace, but against, if you ask me about West Brom or Southampton or any of the other teams, then I think we need to start scoring more goals against them.
Yeah, we need to start scoring goals, I think. So, also, let's get a prediction for away at West Brom. David?
1-0 win, I agree. I think it's going to be scrappy, but you don't want to give any points away to teams who are sort of around the same part of the table with us.
Steve?
I think if we take the game to them, I think there's no reason why we can't go up there and win 2-0.
Okay, and what do you honestly think will happen?
Oh, scrappy 1-0.
Would you be happy with a draw? Do you think a draw is not the result we need? So a draw is going to be seen as 2 points dropped, even though it's away
from
home.
A draw before against some of these teams, you go, okay, so we've picked up another point. We're on course with our points tally to ratio of games. But now, if you come away from West Ham, Southampton, West Brom, Stoke, Swansea with a point, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and really we're going to be in trouble as well.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, that's about it for today's show. David, a very big thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
And let's hope the Albion carry on some good form and survive in the Premier League.
100%, yep. Go on, UC Goals.
Yep, nice one. Okay, you've been listening to the Albion Roar Down Under. Join us in a couple of weeks for the next podcast. Okay, thanks for joining us.